Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello and welcome to the 5 Yard Dynasty podcast with me, Rich Cooling. So it is here, it is finally here, everybody. It is officially draft week. I know we've been, feels like we've been talking about this this for a couple of months, so very excited it's finally here. And absolutely delighted to be joined by, yet again, another fantastic guest. One third of the Fantasy Wildcard. Joining me is Kev White. How are you doing, Kev?
The best third of the Fantasy Wildcard. Yeah, I'm doing really good. Thanks, Rich. Good evening to yourself and the audience. It's draft week, isn't it? So just really pumped about being on the pod and also the draft as well.
And you got big hopes, you got big plans for the Eagles coming up?
I find it hard talking about them, to be honest. I think Harry Roseman's a bit of a disgrace, isn't he? He's traded down, and I wish he'd have just stayed at six. He might have ended up with Justin Fields there, but we'll just have to see how it pans out. I'm not too hopeful. I kind of hope we tank, actually. So as long as we can get some assets that are usable in the long term, I guess is the main thing.
Yeah, I'm fully expecting them to draft another receiver in the first two rounds and dash hopes of many fantasy teams.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt we'll take Devontae Smith to try and be the smartest team in the league.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, today what we're going to do is I'm basically going to fire some questions, sort of a semi-mailbag, I guess is probably the way to describe it. So this is essentially a series of questions for post to Kev around the upcoming rookie draft and perhaps questions around some of the players and such. So we will start at the top. So first of all, I mean, we're talked about as it feels like the 101 for about 3 years, the, you know, generational quarterback, the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck or John Elway or Johnny Unitas, depending on who you listen to. is Trevor Lawrence your 101 in all formats?
Yeah, I think he's got to be. I think if we know exactly where Justin Fields are going to go, I think it'd be pretty close pre-draft to see who is actually the QB one. I think fantasy-wise, they're a lot closer than the community suggests. But I think just because you've got a certainty in where Trevor Lawrence is going and the fact that someone like Fields could end up in Atlanta sitting for a year, I think it's got to be Trevor Lawrence. Anybody that's not got Trevor Lawrence as the QB1 pre-draft are being a little bit too contrarian for my liking.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and a lot's been talked about, you know, Urban Meyer as a human being, shall we say. He's not exactly, you know, squeaky clean. He's got some question marks. But I think in terms of him as an offensive mind, a lot of people forget him that actually, you know, you go back to the Alex Smith days, was it, I want to say Utah. He's an incredible offensive mind that's come up with some, you know, some fantastic new ideas and kind of revolutionised the game at college. And he could potentially, you know, bring an exciting new offense to the NFL. So, yeah, I'm certainly got extremely high hopes of Trevor Lawrence. So the first question then, Kev, so how many players right now would you take over 101 in a Superflex format?
Yeah, so the short answer for me is 9. Logically speaking, we know Trevor Lawrence is going to be the consensus 101. He's currently going as the 8th player in Dynasty Startups at DLF ADP. So my ranking of 10 isn't too far off. He's actually my QB8 overall. I've got 7 QBs ahead of him, which means I might actually be too low on Trevor. But I do think it's a coin flip between guys like him, Herbert, Lamar Jackson, maybe even Russell Wilson, depending on sort of if you want that stability, I guess, someone that's proven it in the past. But I tend to be on the cautious side in the early rounds of Dynasty Startups. So I've got him QB8. He could be as high as QB5. I'd also take my two elite tier running backs ahead of Lawrence, with that being Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley. So, yeah, just to answer the question again, 9 players in total over the 101. And I know you said to me last week that you and Murph had a disagreement on this question. What were your guys' views on this?
Yeah, so Murph and I had an offline chat, and I think his was sort of, I think it was sort of 20 or 30 players that he'd take over Trevor Lawrence. I think his approach was that, you know, he was very cautious. We've not seen Trevor Lawrence in the NFL, and he wouldn't want to basically, as you said, to take him at the beginning of a startup and essentially tie your hopes to a rookie QB. And I think that I do get the idea that people, you know, you're saying, yes, you're pretty much drafting him at his ceiling, aren't you, if you're drafting him in that middle of the first. But I recently did a startup and I had the 108 and I took Saquon over Trevor Lawrence or over the 101. And to be honest, I kind of regretted it as soon as I did it.
Right.
So I've got him as my seventh ranked player overall at the moment. I just think that there's a real drop off for me after the top five QBs now. And that's Mahomes, Dak, Kyler, Josh Allen and Lamar. Obviously, Watson was in that, but plenty of question marks around that. So I'd now put him in the same tier as Justin Herbert. And I think that for me, I'm always going to lean quarterback over running back in a startup. So, yeah, so as I said, it seems slightly ridiculous. It feels deja vu because I know obviously last year we were talking about CEH and Jonathan Taylor as potential first-round start picks.
Yeah.
Obviously, one of them seems to have worked out all right and the other one hasn't. But yeah, call me naive to be jumping on the rookie bandwagon yet again.
I think as well, if you take him running back in round one, let's say you take McCaffrey at pick 4 or 5, with the way in startups that the QB runs are happening, you might end up with your QB1 as Baker Mayfield at the end of round two, which it's not ideal.
But this is exactly it, is that I went, so I'm trying to think now, I went Saquon, came back and got Devontae Adams in the second, because again, I missed out on that sort of second tier of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I then waited another couple of rounds and then I just smashed the position. So I ended up with Carson Wentz, Daniel Jones, Baker Mayfield. And I've got the rookie 103 as well. So
yeah.
It's not awful, but certainly not how I'd like to start. Absolutely. So I guess the other perhaps most talked about name in fantasy circles is Kyle Pitts. I know I've heard some hot takes about Kyle Pitts. I've heard someone suggest that he should be the Dynasty Titan 1 from week one this year, which is a little bit hot from me. But where would you be comfortable taking him in a kind of a rookie draft? So again, we're sort of thinking Superflex format.
Yeah, I think first of all, you're absolutely right. The Pitts hype is pretty crazy right now. Seen several respect analysts call for him to be considered as high as the 102, the 103 in Superflex, which I think is a terrible process. But I'm lower, actually. I'm rookie 109. Don't get me wrong, I think he's an amazing prospect, but if you're taking him at the 102, the 103, you're taking him at his absolute ceiling there. You're not factoring in any chance it could be a bust of likelihood that he's not a top asset in year one, which we know tight ends are a position which takes a while to get acclimatised to in the NFL. I'll be taking the five rookie QBs, the two consensus running backs and Jamar Chase before Pitts. I think you've got to approach rookie drafts to draft for talent and trade for need, which means that even if you're in a deep rebuild, you take a running back over Pitts or you trade the pick away. And then I think the flip side is, as a contender, you can take Pitts at the 109. However, he won't massively help in year one, I don't think. I think if you're tight and needy and you've got the 109, I'd be more willing to look at putting together some sort of a deal to get a Kelce, a Kittle, or a Waller, which in reality it means that I'll get little to none of Pitts in rookie drafts. He goes too high for where I'm comfortable in a rebuild, and I do prefer that veteran towards the end of round one if I'm contending.
Yeah, I have to say I count myself extremely lucky that I'm in three Devy leagues and I've got Pitts in two of them. So I've already got a decent amount of shares come May. I obviously did a fairly detailed thread about sort of Kyle Pitts and his potential value in sort of rookie drafts. And I think for me, it's about a sort of a floor and a ceiling play. And I think that, you know, if we were to just look at projected hit rates of rookie tight ends having a top five season at some point in their career, it's about 50%, which is a similar hit rate for a wide receiver or a running back having a sort of a top 24 season. So I think that the floor play is there to take Pitts probably around that sort of 105, 106. But I do think that you're really capping your ceiling unless he's going to go on and be a, you know, a top five performer at the position 4, 5, 6 years, like someone like Travis Kelce on the ridiculous run he's on. You're really capping the potential value you could get out of that pick. And I think that whilst it might be a safer pick, you know, we've seen the hit rates of highly drafted tight ends be more successful than the likes of running back and wide receiver. You know, if a running back does hit or if a wide receiver does hit, the potential value is, you know, 2-3 times what Kyle Pitts could ever potentially be worth.
Definitely.
So I think that depending on kind of my roster makeup, where I'm at, I'm probably similar to you. I'm around that 107 to 110 range. In that I'd take the 4 quarterbacks, the 2 running backs and Chase ahead of Pitts, certainly. But yeah, it's just, I guess, really what your appetite to risk is. I think that he'll probably be quite a safe pick, but I'm certainly not touching him at the 102, 103, and I'm not taking him ahead of a quarterback.
You've got to think at 103 as well. You're very certain to be getting Travis Kelce straight up for that, I'd think.
Yeah.
In some circumstances.
Yeah, it's very fair. I think that's it, isn't it? Is the way you're looking at it, you know, a quarterback, even if a quarterback comes out and doesn't produce well in their rookie year, maybe even in their second year, you can probably still trade them. Okay, let's give Sam Darnold an example. Sam Darnold at the moment is probably still fetching a first in most leagues.
Yeah.
And he's been pretty abysmal for 3 years. Whereas if Kyle Pitts comes out and is abysmal for 3 years, I'm not sure 3 years down the line he'd fetch in a first.
Yeah, you're right. I think as well, if you just go back to startups as well, look where Kelce goes and look where like the QB 9 or 10 goes, like a Fields or Lance sort of range. It goes rounds before Kelce. So that's it. That's in a best case scenario as well. I think we've got Fields and Lance maybe QB 10 or maybe a little bit lower for Lance, but just Fields, QB 10. That's going miles before Kelce. And that's probably a neutral value on Fields. It could potentially be even higher.
Yeah, absolutely. And so talking about kind of usable pieces, if we're looking at this rookie draft as a kind of a distinction in terms of usable players that are going to be usable in year one, and potential stashes, where do you draw that line? Where do you think that the kind of end of those usable players is? And I the reason I'm posing this question is I think it's a really interesting way to think about your rookie drafts, because I think that people will sit there with the, you know, the 201 or the 203 and think, oh, right, that's a guy that I'm going to draft and I'm going to be starting in week one. But actually, if you start and think about this is a guy I'm picking for year two or year three, it starts to kind of shape your rookie draft and how you're valuing those picks.
Yeah, this is a great question, this, Rich. It got me thinking, actually. So I think it's a really tricky one to answer. Some of the high picks, we won't see usable impact players in year one, guys like Trey Lance and probably Kyle Pitts as well. I see them more of a rookie stash. Overall, I've got 11 players I believe can be immediate contributors and usable in year one. So these are the 4 QBs, not including Lance, the top 3 running backs, and also 4 wide receivers, Chase, Smith, Marshall and Bateman. The wide receivers are a little bit 50-50 for me because they're not always guaranteed to be hit or used as they should in year one. And this number of 11 could drop even further depending on landing spots, such as a QB going to the Falcons. But I think it's a great question to consider. Like you said, Rich, it's one of those where you get to this point and then anybody you take after that point, you can't really bank on them to contribute for your team. So that's where you need to be thinking if you're in contention potentially to be trading away these late first round picks to get veterans that are going to help you more, especially if you're the 111, 112 type and you're a contender. Getting someone like a Mike Evans or a Juju Smith-Schuster is going to give you a better chance at repeating, winning that championship or getting deep in the playoffs again, rather than somebody like a Devontae Smith or a Rashad Bateman. So I think it's a great question. It's something that dynasty players really need to consider where they draw the line. I know you shared a poll last week asking about 2021 picks and how you'd value them with 2022 and 2023 picks. So what's your point of no return as such in your rookie drafts?
I think I'm probably expecting usable assets probably a little bit more than you. I'd sit probably around the 14-15 player range. But I'm probably valuing some of those assets as I'm not expecting them to kind of be used week one, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I do think that as a whole, everybody is overvaluing rookie picks this year. I think that what we really need to understand is that last year is a complete freak outlier in terms of rookie production, but also quality. You know, we normally talk about it's, I think Pete Howard's done a lot of studies on this, but in terms of hit rates, we're talking it's three or four running backs a class, three or four wide receivers a class, and usually one tight end and maybe two quarterbacks. Yeah. That's pretty much what you're expecting out of any rookie class. And we're already looking at quarterbacks, potentially 3.5. Running backs, we're at like 8 or 9. Wide receivers, again, I mean, Lamb, Justin Jefferson, T. Higgins. That's before you get into Claypool, Judy, Mims, people like that. And then yeah, tight ends a little bit different. But if you're looking at this class and expecting to get 15, 16, 17, you know, starters for your fantasy team from this rookie draft, I think you're kind of a little bit deluded.
Yeah, you just look at the back of the second last year. You've got guys like Claypool, Antonio Gibson, sometimes Brandon Ayuk going there. And then you look this year. We did a recent rookie mock this weekend with Dave Wright. And I think the last two picks were Kylan Hill and Amon-Ra St. Brown at the back of the second. And you compare them to the guys I just mentioned then, it's a massive difference in quality.
Yeah, absolutely. One player you did mention that I'm intrigued to kind of pick your brains at is Trey Lance. So at the moment, Trey Lance, according to DLF ADP, so he's the 105 in rookie drafts. You mentioned there that you're not expecting him to start year one. I mean, obviously, a lot of this is dependent on what happens on Thursday, where he ends up. But if he does end up in a, you know, say, for example, in Atlanta or somewhere like that, even in San Francisco, if they're going to keep Jimmy G, do you think that will drop his value if he's not going to start week one?
It's a really interesting question, Rich. I think let's say you're sliding in your drafts and you get into sort of you're a contending team, let's say, you know, the middle to late first, and he's still on your boards in your rookie drafts. Rather than take him, I'd be more tempted to trade to a rebuilding team. I think he's the perfect quarterback for a rebuilding team that's not going to challenge for a couple of seasons. I think inevitably, if he does get a landing spot where he's sat behind a Matt Ryan for a year or somewhere else, you will see it. You have to think his value has got to slide because you've got the opportunity cost of holding him for a year, whereas a guy like Zach Wilson, who's he's not as good as him. I personally wouldn't take Zach Wilson over Trey Lance, but some managers will because they know that Zach Wilson's going to start week one and manage to become impatient.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's an interesting point, isn't it? Because last year we saw Justin Herbert, who wasn't expected to start year one, he was still a first round pick, whereas Jordan Love, who again was probably expected maybe year two, year three, and he was going in like the third round of rookie drafts. And I just wonder, you know, if Trey Lance does end up in Atlanta, we've obviously got that horrific Matt Ryan cap hit where he's got dead cap hits of, I think it's 60 million this year and 40 million next year. So he's not going anywhere for 2 years. So are you going to spend the first round pick on a quarterback that could potentially sit for 2 years? You know, as much as I love Trey Lance, and I think he's got absolutely the highest ceiling of any player in this draft, and I think he could be incredible, both in the NFL, but more particularly for fantasy. Yeah. I don't know if I can spend a first-round pick on someone that's going to do nothing for me for 2 years.
Agreed, yeah.
So I'm going to say this next sort of section, I teed it up as sort of a lightning round, but I don't think it's going to be a lightning round because I'm intrigued to sort of pick your brains and sort of talk about it. So we'll call it a, I don't know, what's slower than light? Thunder? Tortoise round? Something like that. So
any snail.
There you go. There you go. Fantastic. So the best player at cost in this entire draft, where are you at, you think, Kev?
Yeah, I think we'll bump heads on this one, Rich. I know I'm above consensus on this guy and you're below consensus. It's actually my rookie wide receiver 3, Terrace Marshall. Yeah, he's currently a consensus rookie wide receiver 6 with an ADP of pick 16, which is 204, according to DLF. I think that's a big value. I think he should be a first rounder in rookie drafts. I think very talented guy. He was a 5-star recruit coming out of high school, and he declined offers from great programs like Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, in favor of LSU. He's part of one of the greatest wide receiver cores of all time in college football at LSU, alongside current dynasty top 10 wide receivers Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, who's also a rookie. He was a wide receiver 3 on this offense in 2019. But what we've got to bear in mind is that no other player in the NFL has this level of competition, even now or in college. In his 7 games this season, just gone before opting out, he produced 48 catches for 731 yards and 10 touchdowns in basically half a season. There's a lot of talk about the 5-star freshman recruit, Kayshon Boutte, outperforming Marshall. But to give context, when they were on the field together, Marshall had 30 more catches, 523 more yards and 9 more touchdowns. Of course, Boutte is an amazing prospect. He's the consensus Devy wide receiver 1 in some people's eyes. But he did a lot of his damage after Marshall opted out. So I guess looking at Marshall's profile, he's a top 20 athletic profile within all time, 92nd percentile college dominator rating, 86th percentile breakout age. His film grades up in the air, though, still. He was ranked the 6th best wide receiver by NFL.com's legendary Lance Zierlein, which is right around his consensus ADP at wide receiver 6. But I really do believe him. He's still 20 years old. He's one of the youngest guys in the class. He's got the talent. His ceiling's massive. I think the best is yet to come. But the only pause I have got is I'm now convinced he's going to land on the Ravens, which if he does, you've got to drop him in your ranks. I think it's a terrible place for volume to be a success. I think if he does avoid that landmine, though, you need to get on the terrace. I'm sure you'll now give the audience a balanced argument of why they shouldn't go after Marshall. Oh, yeah. That is the best player at cost.
First of all, I just want to say, this isn't a Devy podcast, but Kayshon Boutte is I'm literally in love. He is incredible. I've got two shares in my 3 Devy leagues. You know, that 1 week, I think it was the week after Terrace stepped away and said he was going to opt out. He had 200 and something yards and 3 touchdowns, and it was just absolutely insane. Look, I've talked about Terrace at length. I think that for me, I think from a film perspective, I think he showed elements of being quite lazy, and I have real concerns about someone that's going to come into the NFL with that kind of attitude. I think he's, let's be honest, a physical freak, and he has been since he was at high school. I don't think he's ever had to kind of work hard. I always try to avoid those kind of guys going into the NFL, because I think as soon as you have that sort of character egg flag, unless you are, you know, Randy Moss level athlete, which I don't think Terrace Marshall is, I don't think he's going to, he is going to butt heads when it comes to the next level. There's obviously these, you know, medical concerns over the last couple of weeks with his knee. Apparently, that's you know, some of the same stuff people are talking about, some Jadeveon Clowney with that sort of degenerative knee condition, which might never get better. And I think that, this year just gone, he was very good in 7 games. But he was, his only competition was a true freshman.
Freshman, yeah.
If you're a 5-star recruit as a junior that's, you know, got no competition and you're still not putting up, yes, decent stats, yes, very good stats, but not mind-blowing stats, I'd still question it. And I don't like the fact that people discount the fact that he didn't produce because he had Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson. And I think that, you know, that for me is not enough to discount and moving up. I have crept him up. You know, he's now my wide receiver 7. I'm still a little bit lower than consensus. I think with draft capital, I'm expecting to probably end up having to move him above Tutu Atwell, because I think that Marshall's probably going to be a fringe first, second rounder, and I'm not convinced Tutu Atwell is going to get drafted in the first 4 rounds. But I just think from a film and an analytics perspective, for me, it's not there. But I do get, you know, he is one of, well, he's really the true, you know, big-bodied ex-receiver in this offense, in this draft, outside of Jamar Chase.
Yeah, I think he's got one of the highest ceilings in the class, but you are right as well. I think he is a potential risky guy with the injury concerns. So if you can get him in round 2, I think that's ideal. I think you probably can get him in round 2 as well. It's probably just me that's taking him in round 1 of rookie drafts.
Well, I look forward to all the leagues we're in together, because every time he gets drafted ahead of me, I said, yeah, pleased with that. Move on. So talking about being pleased when somebody else drafts a player, who's a player that the consensus, the league, the community are too high on at the moment?
Yeah, I think we'll be friends on this one, Rich. I've gone for Jalen Waddle, who's currently the, if we're talking about startups as a whole, he's going as a wide receiver 33, which I don't think it's... I think that's terrible, actually, wide receiver 33. It's not as bad in rookie drafts where he's going at pick 13, the 201. I still think it should be a little bit lower, but that's not as bad as wide receiver 33. Just to give a bit of context around that, ADP's got the public taking Waddle over veterans like LaVisca Chenault, Tyler Boyd, Adam Thielen, Tyler Lockett, Brandon Cooks, Curtis Samuel. I mean, it's just wild that you can take a rookie that's 5'9", 180 pounds with 106 total college receptions over veterans of this calibre. So are we in agreement on this one, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's well known. I just don't get it with Jalen Waddle. I think from a film perspective, if you put on his highlights, yep, they look fantastic. And yes, he's a, you know, really fast, really agile, and he can stretch the field, you know, both east, west and north, south. But I think from a production profile, and from a, you know, a consistency on film, I just don't see it. And I think that I'm going to be so delighted in every single one of my leagues when he goes in the first round. I'm going to be delighted every time he gets taken, because for me, I wouldn't take him until probably the mid to back end of the second. And to be honest, at that point, I'm normally drafting running backs anyway. So wherever he goes, I'm probably going to end up with 0 shares.
Do you ever consider the, like, fading players because of the college they're at? For example, we've had recent guys like Ruggs and Judy that struggled as rookies. I know that the community is really high on Judy still. I think that he's going to turn it around. But do you ever get thinking about players coming out of college at certain places that have been busts in the NFL or that have not performed, thinking maybe it's the college scheme that's making them look better than they are? I mean, you think about Alabama, maybe, that Damien Harris didn't do much. Josh Jacobs has performed, but I think that's more based on volume than talent. Would that have given you concerns over Najee Harris, for example?
Yeah, I, to be honest, I try not to. I try to treat each player on, you know, a level playing field. I think that you can get yourself, you know, in a sticky situation, like we talk about Ohio State quarterbacks, and is that potentially one of the reasons why Justin Fields is suddenly plummeting down maybe NFL boards and that kind of thing. And I think that for me, if it's a scheme specific reason, you know, you think of someone like a Baylor in the, you know, sort of 10 years ago, where it was a very specific scheme, and outside of a couple of players, their receivers are putting up ridiculous stats and actually didn't transition well to the NFL. Then yes, I'd get that. But if you're looking at Alabama, I think that I'm not discounting it. I'm not looking at it and saying I won't touch any of their wide receivers. To be honest, I was much lower than consensus on Ruggs. I'm probably a little bit lower than consensus on Devonta Smith, and I'm a lot lower than consensus on Jalen Waddle. But I had Jerry Jeudy as my wide receiver 2 in the class last year.
Yeah.
So I guess in a long way of saying, no, I try not to avoid specific, you know, teams and specific college programs, but I can see why people sometimes make that argument. So moving on to sort of the, I guess this is one that I'm a little bit intrigued to hear your thoughts on. So this was, I sort of threw it out as a slightly different question. So it's the player that is most reliant on draft from a fantasy perspective. I'm intrigued to hear your thoughts here.
Yeah, I've actually gone for Kadarius Toney on this one. I mean, analytically, he's not a great prospect looking at the numbers. 30th percentile dominator rating, 24th percentile breakout age. I think the area of Tony's profile that lift him up are the film grades and the expected draft capital. I've got him rookie wide receiver 9. I do think there's a strong chance he does actually go round 1 in the NFL draft, which is why he's projected so high. If he doesn't get that draft capital, I can see him dropping into that wide receiver 15 to 20 range. I do think he is athletically gifted, but at 5'11", 193 pounds, I need to see earlier production rather than being a one-year wonder as a senior, especially in an offense with favorable matchups, part of that offense with the unicorn tight end Kyle Pitts. So, yeah, Kadarius Toney is a worry for me. I think there is a really good chance he gets round on draft capital, but I'm going to try and stay away from him if possible.
Yeah, I've been having this conversation with Ash of the college podcast. He's a big Toney fan, and he's pushing every mock we do, he's pushing him in the first round of the NFL draft and thinks he's going to be in that sort of 25 to 32 range. I just don't see it, to be honest. I see a guy that couldn't produce until he was older than everybody. You know, he was a late breakout. He basically did nothing for 3 years and then suddenly blew up. And, you know, when that offense was humming as a senior, that always scares me. When you can't do anything, you know, we always talk about age adjusted. When you can't do anything when you're the same age as the guys you're going up against and then suddenly blow up in your senior year, I'm always a little bit scared. So yeah, I'm easily avoiding Kadarius Toney. If he is a first round, you know, NFL pick, then he'll probably move up a little bit. He's currently more wide receiver 15. I do rely on draft capital quite heavily, but I can't see him getting any higher than 10 for me potentially.
Yeah, I think I'd have him over guys currently like Tylan Wallace, Amon-Ra St. Brown, just because I think he's going to get a lot better draft capital than those. But yeah, if he slides into round 2 and 3, he's just going to be sliding down my rookie rankings. I think, what's your thoughts on this? With Toney, I seem to see that he's higher ranked by people that are film grinders rather than with an analytics base. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I completely get it because, you know, it's similar to what we're talking about with Jalen Waddle, isn't it? Is that from an analytical base, there's nothing there to like. If someone's done nothing for the first three years of their college career, you know, that you can look at any analytical model for a wide receiver and at some point it will be based around age-adjusted production and he's not got it. And then suddenly you can stick on the tape and say, actually, he does look quite good. Yes, he's fast. Yeah. But I for me, you know, I try and sit somewhere in between, probably lean slightly more towards the analytical side. And I just don't see it from a film perspective. I think that he's fast, but I think at the NFL, everybody's fast. And I just don't think he's going to succeed, being honest. And then the flip side of the draft capital debate. So which player is most reliant on landing spot?
Yeah, this one hurts because I really like this guy. He's my wide receiver 7, but I mean, it's really close between my wide receiver 4 and wide receiver 7. But the guy I'm picking that's most reliant on landing spot is Rondale Moore. I mean, he's got some outstanding aspects to his college profile. He ran a 4.32 at his pro day, showing he's rapid. He's got outstanding agility and quickness. He's got that 99th percentile breakout age. He had one of the most prolific freshman seasons in college history. And he's also got an above average dominator rating during his time at Purdue. The massive downside, no pun intended, is his size. He's a tiny man at 5'7", 181 pounds. Obviously, he plays above that weight. He's a very strong guy, but we haven't seen many guys look like him, if at all, before in the NFL, which makes him a really risky proposition, I think. For someone that has got such a clean analytical profile, apart from his size, the first percentile college yards per reception is worrying, averaging 9.4 yards per reception over his college career. It just shows that he was used in an interesting way as a bit of a gadget player sometimes, near the line of scrimmage, a low average depth of target type receiver. So I think for that reason, the size and the usage, I think is very dependent on landing on the in the right spot, the right scheme, a smart coach that's going to make the most of his ability. What sort of team do you think would be a nice fit to maximise Rondale? Would it be someone like an Andy Reid or a different team?
I always struggle with this answer when it comes to this type of receiver, because I think that, to be honest, any you could sit here and say, yeah, I want him to be with a great offensive mind. You know, I want him to go and be in LA with Sean McVay or something like that. But actually, I feel like those kind of guys have a system, have a scheme, and aren't going to build it around one guy. Yeah. And that's what Rondale Moore essentially is reliant on. I think that this is a guy that, as you said, had an incredible freshman year, but that was because it was purely volume-based. He had, if you're taking DLF, their top 27 wide receivers as they have them ranked, he had the highest reception of the game of his best season, so that rookie season. And that's basically driven all of that production in that rookie year. Was, as you said, he had a ridiculously low average depth of target, and it was just they were just getting the ball in his hands. And I think that for him to be a success at the NFL level, that's basically what they're going to need. Is you're going to need to have an offensive coordinator say, we're building our offense around getting Rondale Moore the ball. And I think that he is such an incredible player and such an incredible athlete that I'm very excited if an offense does that, he could be an absolute, you know, beast for fantasy purposes. He's currently my wide receiver 4. But
wow, that's nice.
But he is, as you said, so reliant. I think you really hit the nail on the head here. He's so reliant on where he's going to go, building the offense around him. If a team's going to line him up and say, right, you are a slot receiver, you're going to run the full route tree, we're going to target you 4 to 6 times a game, and we just expect you to be a traditional slot receiver.
Yeah, then I think
he's not going to produce. He's not going to do anything from a fantasy. Because I don't think whilst he's a very good route runner, I don't think he can be used as a traditional receiver.
I think the great thing as well, if you're a Rondale fan, is that his value seems to be all over the place in terms of different people have pretty different views. Like you said, you're a wide receiver 4. I saw it get mentioned that he went in the late 2nd in a rookie draft of one of my friends today. So if you're high on him, you can probably sit tight and get him. Probably you'll probably be higher on him than consensus if you do like him.
Yeah, and I do think it's going to be interesting because I thought he could potentially sneak in sort of back end of the first round, maybe early 2nd, someone like a Jacksonville or maybe even a New York Jets, someone in that early 2nd round that could go and say, right, he's a usable piece that we're going to move around all over the place. But it seems over the last couple of weeks, you know, I saw Daniel Jeremiah's tweeting out about he had a Moore ranked in his top 5 wide receivers and he'd completely forgotten about the other Moore being Rondale. And I was like, okay, maybe this means that the NFL is a lot lower on Rondale Moore than we think. And if he starts, you know, drifting down to that 2nd or 3rd round, maybe even beyond that, then yeah, I'll be seriously concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bit very worrying. So you have him higher than Elijah Moore?
I do. I've got him in the same tier at the moment. I'll be on it. I'm very close to tipping Elijah Moore over. I think that once I had draft capital in, I think Elijah Moore would definitely go above Rondale Moore. But I'm just so excited by that freshman year. Like, as you said, it is essentially one of the best freshman years we've ever seen in terms of age adjustment. Rondomar's got it. But again, I did do a bit of work around sort of an idea of a double breakout age, which is basically trying to eliminate one-hit wonders. And Rondell Moore was basically that. And he was kind of the question mark around players that had an age 18 or 19 breakout and then didn't have a second breakout before the age of 20, basically didn't go on and hit in the NFL. And Rondell Moore is one of those that had an age 18 breakout, didn't have that second season of success. And it does leave that question mark for me at the moment.
Yeah, them Moors are very interesting.
Indeed. I'm very excited to see them on Thursday and where they do end up. So now's really, this isn't a podcast now, Kev. This is just for me to pick your brains for all the leagues that we're in together so that I can know where you're going for your sleepers. So we're going to go through and get your sleeper at each position. So starting at the number one spot, quarterback. We've obviously got the kind of the top five, and then I think there's probably another five that are, you know, in that sort of next bracket after that, which is the one that you've got your eye on.
Yeah, my sleeper QB, I've gone for Trevor Lawrence. No, I'm just kidding. I've gone for Kellen Mond. He's my clear QB six behind the popular big five we all know. So in terms of rookie rank, I'm right about consensus. However, he's actually pretty close to my QB5, Mac Jones, depending on if he gets maybe second round draft capital. He could be really close. Kellen Mond, let's see, he's athletic. He's had that early production at Texas A&M, and he's got that Konami code rush upside that we love for fantasy. He is going at the back of round three in rookie mocks. I think he should be earlier than that, probably early round three. I don't think he's as strong of a prospect as a guy last year, Jalen Hurts, but if he's a second round prospect like Jalen, he's going to have a chance to start at some point in the future, which means you're going to get more than the third round pick that you paid for him at this point sometime in the near future. So Kellen Mond's my sleeper.
Yeah, and I think that, to be honest, I guess take you behind the curtain a little bit of my mind when it comes to rookie draft. In Superflex formats, I think any one of that next five kind of quarterbacks that we're talking about, so whether that be Jamie Newman, Kellen Mond, Kyle Trask, Davis Mills, any of those in that third or fourth round are probably the best lottery tickets you can take, because if they do hit, if they do win a starting job, if there's an injury or something like that, then their value skyrockets. And I don't think, outside of maybe the running back position, which you're probably less likely to find a diamond in the rough that's going to come in and be a stud, I think you might as well take a lottery ticket on one of these quarterbacks. I think, you know, we've heard all of them, it seems like, mentioned as potentially the guy that's going to be taken at the back end of the first round. And we've talked about, you know, there's loads of teams with aging quarterbacks, whether it's Tampa Bay or Pittsburgh, that could be interested in taking a quarterback there. So I think that, if, as you said, if in the third round, in the fourth round, maybe even in the fifth round in Superflex formats, if you're going to take a punt, why not take a punt on one of these quarterbacks? Because, you know, you're not really wasting any capital. You're not really wasting anything. Yeah. But if they do hit, then you could potentially get a first round pick back as soon as that quarterback becomes starting quarterback.
And I think as well, what you've got to think is, you're a rebuilding team. Let's say you finish last in your league and you've got the 101. You're likely going to have the 301 as well in a rebuild. So 301, it's fine to take a shot on Kellen Mond, because you can afford to wait a little bit in a rebuild and give him a chance to hit that lineup before moving him on for something a lot better than the 301.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we say this every year, there's 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL. But the truth is that there's going to be 8 to 10 injuries. There's going to be, you know, your Case Keenum starting a couple of weeks. If Kellen Mond goes and is the backup, wherever he goes, he takes one injury and he's suddenly one of those 32 starting quarterbacks. And depending on your league format, that could suddenly be very valuable. So running back position. So who's your deep sleeper here?
Yeah, I'm just going to give a quick mention first to Kenny Gainwell. I think he's a fantastic prospect. He kept Antonio Gibson off the field in 2019. He's not got the bell cow size that you want, but he is explosive. And if he got similar draft capital to one of the top three running backs, I think there's potential that he can jump them and be as high as running back two in my rankings. That's pretty spicy, I know. But if he's in round two and Jonte Williams in round two, I don't think it's crazy to pick Gainwell over Williams. Not saying I would, but I think it's something you've got to consider depending on what you're looking for from your running backs. But Kenny Gainwell's not my sleeper.
No, I love it. Any mention of Kenny Gainwell, I think that the guy's fantastic. And I think that, you know, what is underrated when it comes to running backs in rookie drafts and kind of, you know, we look at them as running backs, but he's, for me, head and shoulders above every other running back in the draft in terms of his receiving ability. I know your co-host Matt won't like me saying that about Michael Carter, but I think Kenny Gainwell's the only running back that I'm comfortable lining up from day one in the slot out wide and running routes. I think that ability makes him so much more valuable from the fantasy aspect. He's my running back four, and certainly if he gets you know, decent draft capital, if he has a team fall in love with him early, I could easily see him creeping up into that 10th top three. I don't know if I'm ready to go there yet. I think I'll probably stay at four, but it would be interesting.
It would indeed. I think you're a smart guy, obviously, Rich, having Kenny G as your running back four, but sleeper running back. I'm not going to talk about an overrated guy like Michael Carter, as Matt did. I'll go a little bit deeper on this one. I'm going for Elijah Mitchell. He's an older guy at 23. He'll be a 23-year-old rookie, sorry, but he's the best athletic running back in the class. 4.35 wheels and explosiveness for days. He only had 49 catches in college. However, this was on 57 targets, which is a fantastic 86% catch rate. He also averaged over 12 yards per catch, showing the game-breaking speed I mentioned just a little bit earlier. And he's currently going as running back 14 in the middle of the fourth round in rookie drafts. Personally, I think he needs to be considered a round earlier, the middle of the third. And like I said, if you're taking darts in round three and beyond, it's better to take a shot on somebody that's an athlete that's got potential in the pass game than a two-down plodder. So I just want to know if you are an Elijah Mitchell fan, Rich.
I can't really make up my mind, if I'm being honest. There's elements I like of him. I think, as you said, he's a fantastic athlete. You know, he's got the second highest weight-adjusted speed score in the draft at running back position. But he never had more than a 45% opportunity share in that offense. And I just think that it never sits great with me that a guy that he didn't have a fantastic running mate. And I think that he can't carve out a 60, 70, 80% role in college. What makes him going to do it in the NFL? He was also only a two-star recruit.
Yeah.
So I can't really make up my mind, if I'm being honest. He's one, I think I said it on last week's pod, he's one that I'm intrigued to see what the NFL think, because I think that they're probably going to tell me what to think a lot more than I can, because I can't make up my mind on his profile. So draft capital will probably answer a lot for me.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be a bell cow player or a majority backfield player. He's going to be someone that's a role player, which caps him as a potential flex guy at the next level. And like I said, he didn't really have a full workload at the Raging Cajuns. So, I mean, that says it all, that he was playing for the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana Lafayette, I believe.
Yeah, exactly that. So, sleeper wide receiver.
Yes, yeah, it's an interesting one, this, Rich. I think this rookie wide receiver class is actually pretty similar to the NFL wide receiver rankings, in the sense that after the top six or seven, eight players, the next 15 to 20 are pretty similar in terms of value. I think there's several rookie wide receivers that could be considered a sleeper, with consensus all over the place. But I've gone for Nico Collins. There's quite a bit in his profile to get you worried. First of all, he's coming out as a senior. He's not played since 2019 after opting out, and his pro comparison on NFL.com is N'Keal Harry. But there are positives. I do promise he is my sleeper. I'm not just trashing him. he's a big, fast dude, 6'4", 215, an exceptional deep threat with huge catch radius and early breakout. And going back to NFL.com's film grades, he's actually higher graded than guys like Rashad Bateman and Rondale Moore. He didn't do a ton in college, but I do think he's a raw prospect. He showed it early. He's got a huge ceiling. He's an intriguing guy in round 3 or 4 of rookie drafts. I think you want an upside, and Nico Collins has got that for me. And I'll also give an honourable mention to a guy called Simi Fehoko. Again, a raw prospect with high ceiling. He's in the mould of an Alshon Jeffrey, Kenny Golladay type player. Another dart throw he can take in the later rounds of your rookie drafts.
I find it interesting. I've been playing with a lot of numbers today. I've been updating models and things. And one of the number one stats that I use in any model is best yards per team pass attempt. And Nico Collins and Semi Fehoko are probably two of the lowest in that one stat. So I do find it funny that they're probably going to be two receivers that I'm a lot lower than consensus on because of that.
Yeah.
And they are tabbing them as fantastic potential sleepers.
You don't have to worry about them, Rich. I'll just have them.
I'm quite happy you having them. I don't think I'm going to have any shares of either, if I'm being honest. So the dream final position, you know, the big one that everybody's expecting massive breakouts from, tight end. Where are you going here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't get as excited as some about tight end, but my sleeper tight end is Tony's cousin, Kenny Yeboah. I hope my co-host Ali likes that one. I know he mentioned it on your show a bit back. Kenny Yeboah is probably not a sleeper as such. A lot of people have him as tight end 4, but I'm a big fan. Essentially, for tight end, you're looking for athleticism and opportunity. Now, Yeboah, he didn't do any athletic testing, but based on his 98th percentile yards per reception, you can make an astute guess that he's an explosive guy that can get down the field. He will need a strong landing spot to break out with that opportunity. But remember, tight end is a slow burner. So even if he does get a bad landing spot, he shouldn't be totally put off by that. Situations change. I really like his upside, although I'm not a huge fan of rostering tight ends that can't contribute straight away. He's someone that you can have on your taxi squad or on deeper rosters. So I do like him as a sleeper, but I won't have a ton of him unless it's a deep league or there is a taxi squad. I just feel that for your tight end 3, you still want someone that's potentially usable in some weeks in case you get an injury, etc. So, but yeah, I do like him. Tight end 4 is my sleeper. It's hard to give sleeper at tight end, I think, because
yeah, it's those like easiest positions, is it? Yeah, sort of stitched you up slightly.
You're not as high anyway, yeah.
not really. I think for me, and I know a lot of people are talking about this draft class as potentially, you know, 3 or 4 potential starters at the next level at tight end. To me, this draft class at tight end is literally Cole Pitts and no one else. I don't want anyone else. I think that for me, Brevin Jordan and Pat Freiermuth are being overdrafted. I think Hunter Long is interesting to me. And I think that Kenny Yeboah is... he is what he is. I think I'm not going to be wasting roster spots on someone like that. I'd rather, you know, pay up at tight end and miss out on the breakout, because even if, you know, he does break out and becomes a usable tight end, he's not worth anything, is he? If I'm desperate at tight end, I'm happy to go and spend a second round pick on a Logan Thomas or a Robert Tonyan or someone like that, yeah, who will just tide me over for a year rather than spending a third or fourth round pick on someone like
that. Agreed.
I'm interested though, Mock Draftable have Kenny Yeboah as their athletic comp is Hunter Henry, who was obviously, you know, highly drafted, very, very usable tight end in the NFL. So maybe a little something to keep an eye on.
Interesting.
Well, that concludes the pod. So thank you so much for joining us, Kev. I think it's been fantastic. It's nice to sort of have a run through of things ahead of Thursday, and hopefully all of our rankings and rookie models don't get one up too much when the NFL completely disagrees with everything we think.
Yeah, it's a really interesting time. It's the most fun time of the year, but like you said, it's a lot of changing models over the next week or so to make sure you've got the right players in the right spots. But I think one of the other things to mention about the draft is not to be changing too much. I think draft capital as an input is definitely something that should take priority, but I think landing spots, they're not as massive for some positions. I think running back, you do need a pretty decent system to excel. But like wide receiver, if you did end up in a slightly worse landing spot than expected, it can be overcome. Just look at guys like AJ Brown. He did, everyone were writing him off when he went to Tennessee, and he did all right. Chase Claypool, people thought he was going to be wide receiver for tight end, maybe. I thought he might be a tight end. but yeah, just, I think with changing your rankings, draft capital, take into account, but landing spot, take it into account, but not as much as you should.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. So before you leave, Kev, hopefully everybody listening knows where to find you, but if you could just remind us, where can we find you?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at @dynasty_goat. I'm the host of the Fantasy Wildcard. It's a weekly Dynasty show. We live stream every other Tuesday and Sunday, and that's at Fantasy Wildcard. We've also got our charity streamer fund, which is less than 4 weeks away, Saturday, May the 22nd. We're raising funds for Mind Charity supporting mental health, and delighted that you're going to be part of the opening ceremony, Rich.
Got a lot of pressure kicking it off, but very much looking forward to it.
So yeah, just please check out the streamathon and donate to this fantastic cause. And then just to wrap it up, thank you for having me on, Rich. It's been a lot of fun. I've had a great time. I've had a lovely evening. It's just been like chatting to your mate down at the pub now that we can go to the pub again. It's not felt like a show. It's just felt like having a chat with your mate. So thanks for having me on, and can't wait for the NFL draft.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. And I look forward to your Eagles destroying the hopes of another fancy wide receiver. But yeah, thank you very much. And guys, we will be back again next week with a post-draft Rises and Fallers podcast. Got a very exciting guest lined up for that. And we will see you again next week.